You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Roy Orbison. I think he's from Texas. Mike Musselman joins us. He's living in Texas. Do you think you'll die in Texas?
What kind of question is that?
Like, ask me if I think I'll die in California.
No, that's kind of a morbid question.
Oh, man. Are we sensitive today? It just meant, are you going to stay in Texas for the rest of your life?
Yes, I'm going to be a Texas resident.
There you go. All right. Hey, your Vikings beat the 49ers last night on the last play of the game. Kind of bummed me out.
Oh, great.
Kind of bummed me out. But I thought you'd be happy about that. And
preseason.
Oh, here we go. We're not going to talk about it until Mike decides. All right, give us an update. Have you been watching the thing down in, first of all, how many miles do you live from Houston?
About 400 miles.
400 miles from Houston, and tell everybody in what general direction?
Houston is, southeast of me, yeah.
Southeast of you, and you are living in, biggest city is Dallas.
North Central.
Dallas, Fort Worth, and which direction are you from Dallas, Fort Worth? North, south, east, or west?
West.
So Mike's west of, then it's 250 miles from you.
What is?
Houston.
It's how far?
It's 250 miles? No.
Are you talking about Houston, Texas?
Are you, where are you relative to Weatherford?
Hang on. I am.
Parker, Texas. Oh, here's Granbury. As the crow flies, it's 234 miles. Now, I know
I'm not a crow, and I don't fly.
I know. I knew that was coming. I know you're not a crow, so even with turns and stuff like that, you're only a couple hours in from, depending on who's driving, you're like 3 or 4 hours from Houston.
5 hours.
Have you guys gotten any of the weather, or is that all dissipated towards the coast?
We got rain. We got belts of rain yesterday.
How much?
I don't know. I don't have another thing out. Coffee and data. Enough.
Heavy, light, medium?
At times it was kind of heavy, and then other times it was just constant, like, light rain.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Were you at all part of the planning? I don't know if you remember this, but you might. After the whole Katrina thing, General Mike Myatt, do you know General Myatt? Mike knows everybody. Mike Myatt was, retired and is part of the, he runs the Marine Memorial Association up in San Francisco, has a hotel, all that kind of stuff. They do big stuff and, always active in Marine Corps, stuff. Anyway, General Myatt, initiated, discussions or pushed for the initiation of discussions between the city of San Francisco, city of Oakland, state of California, and, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marine Corps that have tremendous assets in the state, that would, at least the discussions were, if San Francisco or Los Angeles was hit with a major catastrophic event, how would the active duty military be used before the Guard could be mobilized and organized and kind of sent to these places? And were you a part of any of that?
No, not part of that. Actually, I did some stuff in San Diego where they did a big, huge scenario when the Navy left its training base there next to MCRD. It was all vacant.
Right.
And they did a big, huge scenario where they brought all this different stuff in. and it's kind of like crisis management stuff, and they were looking at different levels of technology. And so I was brought down there to be a subject matter expert to kind of look at the integration and how we integrate. And it, you know, Mac, it was just the problem with the natural disasters in America is there's so many levels of bureaucracy. It's just,
right.
In order to streamline that and make it quick, they got to share information, they got to delegate authority, they got to, you know, do these types of things. And no one's willing to do that. Everybody wants, like the problem in San Diego was you had one overall commander in charge of everything. So that looked good on paper. The problem was all your subset commanders, the guys that brought, like the Coast Guard brought his guys in, and, you know, all these NGOs brought their stuff in, and, you know, Red Cross. No one wanted to work with anybody.
Explain.
They were all.
Explain what NGO is.
It's just a non-government organization, meaning they're not funded by the government. They're private organizations that do disaster relief.
Red Cross, things like that. Salvation Army.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of them.
Yeah, they do big stuff. Doctors Without Borders.
Yeah.
I mean, all these organizations you hear fall under the phrase, the term Mike used, NGO. And so keep going.
But so the problem was these people will say, okay, I'm going to bring all of this to bear, but I'm in command. And so, okay, whatever, sure. And so you have these committees. So you had one guy in charge who couldn't really make any decisions because, you know, these subset entities that were, you know, doing their own thing, and trying to coordinate that is very, very difficult. You know, federal supersedes, you know, state supersedes county supersedes city, you know, and no one liked to be a subset of anybody. You know, it's just too many times personalities got involved. Or, you know, when the kudos went out at the end of the day, if they wanted to make sure that they got the kudos, you know, so. It was mind-boggling to me where, you know, in the Marine Corps or in the military, you know, we had battalions or Marine units that answered to Army commands and Army commands that answered to Marine units and so on and so forth. You had one guy in charge, one group that made all decisions, and it didn't matter. You followed. You know, you could give some advice on how they employ you, but at the end of the day, you are following orders. But with this situation, it really, you know, you have law enforcement, federal law enforcement, county, state, city, all trying to jockey for position. I mean, it was asinine.
And then you have a emergency operation coordinator that's from the city that is overwhelmed. I mean, when they think of combined resources, they think of the sheriff department, right? They think of police department and then some other.
Fire.
Right.
Medical.
Fire, medical, like the normal stuff we do. And then we'll bring in, Salvation Army will have a rep in here. And now all of a sudden we're talking about the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, Marine Corps, all this other stuff. And it's a lot. It's rice bowl stuff, and it's frustrating because there's nobody that can do what the American military can do, and what we saw in Katrina, and I know Michael remember this. There was a lot of angst in the American military watching the inept response to Katrina, and sitting on your base and looking out and seeing these rows of CH-47s. Or these rows of Ospreys or 53s that could get there and help, or these or a parking lot full of six bys that can drive through that kind of water, and nobody calls, and in a state like Texas that has it everywhere, it just was very frustrating. So this was a topic of conversation where you had American military units putting up their hands saying, "Hey, use us, man." And they were just too overwhelmed to do it. And what Mike's talking about is
there's too much red tape. That's the problem. to employ federal troops is it's a lot of...
It's a big deal. But again, we need to get beyond that because there is one organization, and only one in the country, that can be the Band-Aid to immediately moving people, right? We don't require a lot of support. We'll bring our own water. We'll bring our own food. You know, we don't even need you to give us a space because outside of Houston, we can go to Fort Hood. We can send our guys to Corpus to Kingsville, Corpus Christi. We have facilities around that we can fly out of. We can base out of. We don't need hardly a whole lot from you, except maybe a FARP, someplace to refuel locally, so we can stay on station longer. But that's the extent. But we can get there today. You know, when this thing was estimated,
and we can bring dozens of field hospitals, sanitation, water purification, you know, all of that stuff.
And then we'll go away. When your guard guys get there and your longer sustained presence, then we'll go away in a week or 10 days. But if you would have put the American military on a 6-hour tether last Thursday and said, this thing's going to be huge, these aviation units, these truck units, these infantry units, you're on 6 hours, you know, make liaison as per, you know, Frago umptifrats. You've been designated as this response. Stand by.
You'd have 100 Zodiacs instead of three. You could have, you know, it's just mind-boggling to me, the amount of manpower
that you can get. The other thing that's mind-boggling is, you know, Houston does this on a regular basis. I mean, when you think of, like, stuff in the Gulf, you think of, you know, the Florida Panhandle. You think of, you know, the event in Mississippi a few years ago. You think of Katrina. You think of Galveston, Corpus Christi, Houston area. I mean, it's all stuff that's historically going to happen. And why these things, and again, can we get over, we're not going to go take over the state of Texas, okay? If we go down there. And we do this all over the world at a moment's notice. You're part of a MU. Have you ever been part of a humanitarian effort, Mike?
Yeah.
Where?
All the time. East Timor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I never did when I was on part of the Ranger. Never did that. But I mean, we do it all over the world. And it's a very and people that Marines that do it, they never forget the experience of people that are completely on their ass and need your help, and all of a sudden you show up, whether it be water or a medevac or a doctor or whatever, and you know you watch that and it touches your heart, and the country could use a little bit of that these days.
Yeah, oh, you're right. So. Yeah, I mean, I look back when we were deployed for the LA riots.
Yikes.
You know,
right?
And here was the situation with the California National Guard had already gone. The problem was they just weren't prepared.
Right.
And what I saw firsthand with the California National Guard, it was, oh my goodness, these guys were, you know, taken from the same neighborhoods. The one day that they're not being mobilized, they're actually looting Best Buy, and then they're doing. they're doing it in uniform the third day.
Wow.
I mean, it was like, it was horrible, Mac.
And you were with who? First LAR, right? First LAR.
No, it was one. We were with 5th Marines at the time.
Ah, wow. No, I remember my guys were, actually, my company was one of the companies that was on a tether after when they did the second trial in 1993. What they had heard was that they weren't going to burn down their neighborhoods this time. They were going to go to other places in Los Angeles and burn them down. And I was like, what? And no, and so you, I went to a meeting and they said, and they liked LAVs because, you know, we have wheels, we can get around, and all of our own communication stuff. And it looks kind of intimidating with a 25 millimeter gun on it. But the mobility was the key issue, and Philip Brown ready to go. But we never went. But anyway, but you have to take your hat off to General Myatt, who after Katrina has been very instrumental in pushing this discussion between civil and military leaders in terms of trying to create a place where you plug in. Hey, you know, we'll have an LNO sit at a desk, and there'll be like maybe three or four people there, a ground guy, an air guy, right, and maybe a medical guy, and then an overall coordinator guy, and that's all we'll do. And we'll have these capabilities. Just tell us what you want, and then in terms of aviation, give us call signs and frequencies, and we know how to play with everybody. We play good with the rest of the kids. We want to help. So.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I saw today, though, that Governor Abbott, all of the Texas National Guard are now mobilized, so.
Yeah. And again, what happens, though, when these things happen, now remember, this thing started on Friday. We're on Monday now. When is the National Guard going to get there? Thursday, Friday? You know, today, hopefully? I don't know. But so to me, that's what the active duty military can do. The active duty could have been there Thursday night, right? When you know it's coming, or they could have been there at the latest Saturday. If you give them the warning order and you have these, you know, the connections in place, like I said, Houston, Mike, how many military installations are in Texas, for God's sakes?
Oh, there's a lot.
Texas has got its share of the military. So, I mean, you can, again, we don't have to go squat in Houston to support operations in Houston. You know, we can take over a football field on the outskirts as an LZ. You know, we can ferry Marines there. They can be ferried into the city where you need them or trucked into the city. You know, it'd be very cool if we could help our own citizens at times. The whatnot. The Montana man posted a picture of a fire, I guess, up in Montana. Montana man takes some really he takes some really beautiful pictures of Montana. Have you ever been to Montana, Mike?
Yeah.
Montana's, if you've never been there, Montana's a beautiful state.
Yeah, it is. It is a beautiful state.
The terrain is kind of in parts rolling, and then some places big mountains, there's a big valley and river that runs through it. It's absolutely beautiful, though. And Montana man, I don't know that he's a photographer. I mean, he can barely manage the interns, so I think photography might be a bit too much. But he posts some pretty cool pictures. Doc, he asked about my new dog named, he was advertised as Doc. And Michael, do you guys own a pet?
Yeah, we have a German Shepherd.
Have you ever been down to the place is called the Ann Woodward Animal Adoption Center? Have you ever been to that place? It's north of San Diego, inland off Via del Valle.
It's what?
It's north off Via del Valle. I mean, it's east off Via del Valle, north of San Diego. It's out by Rancho Santa Fe. Got a huge horse hospital. It's got a huge pet hospital, an adoption facility. It's got a post-traumatic stress, encounter where if animals help you, you can go work with horses and animals. Very, very cool place. I'd never been there. And so we went down there and got a dog by the name. His name is now Joe because he did not know his name. They just advertised it. So he's now Joe. I'm big on one. What's your dog's name?
Blitz.
See, I'm like you. Single syllable name, so when I yell at it, don't got to say too much, and he knows. But he's a good dog, man. He sleeps all night, and he runs around all day, and no vacuum cleaner in the world has anything on Joe, because everything in the house that's on the floor is in his mouth. So, anyway, but pretty cool having a puppy around. So Jack does not know what to make of him yet. He's like still, jury's still out. But he sleeps through the night. That's the biggest thing. So So cool. How old's your dog? And why'd you get a German Shepherd?
4.
Oh.
Oh, because I've always had German Shepherds.
Really? Is it?
And they're so smart and they're easy to train and everything's great about them. They're just a good looking dog.
Is it a security thing for your wife when you're away or what?
I mean, not really. No, I mean, we got them. It was just kind of a fluke where we got them through a rescue, and a German Shepherd rescue, and he was a purebred puppy, and we got him at 8 weeks. So, it worked out perfect for us.
Who did you send him to?
And he's a great. Yeah, he went to school. He went to obedience school for about a year and a half.
Nice.
So, he is a great dog, man. He is. I mean, it's nice that when other people see him, or other people come by, and they'll bring their dogs, and we'll be out, and I tell them to lay down, and their dog's like all over on the chain, and he's and Blitz doesn't have to be walked on a chain.
Oh,
and
really?
He's just as good on off leash too, and I'll tell them to lay down, and the people will have their dogs be pulling and tugging, and Blitz will just be looking at me laying down like, what's wrong with that dog? and the person's always like, your dog is so well-trained and so well-mannered. No, like, well, it takes time. You got to give up time to get good results out of the dog.
Did you grow up with dogs?
Yeah.
We had dogs when I was little, but then, for whatever reason, we stopped having dogs. I think because we were gone so much in the summer and whatnot, when we're going wherever my dad was. But now that I look back on retrospect, that's stupid. We could have taken our dog with us. No big deal. Now let me give you, the reason I got Joe was because I didn't think that I thought Jack should have a buddy, a wingman, if you will. And I saw families that had 2 dogs. I thought, well, it's not that much more work. You're already doing most of it anyway. And having a wingman is a good thing. Good idea, bad idea. What do you think?
What do you mean?
Instead of having one, having 2.
Whatever. I mean, I just like one dog. I know people that, so it's not a good or a bad idea, whatever you're comfortable with. I just don't want 2 dogs.
I'm with you.
Here's
an email. Hey, Mac, I'm kind of surprised Gunner doesn't have hunting dogs. Has he ever thought about it? Has he thought about it and rejected the idea? So
why would I need a hunting dog?
Because you like to hunt?
I know, but I don't need a dog. If you have a dog that helps you hunt, then maybe you need to hunt better.
Ooh, damn. I didn't know we were going to go there.
Yeah, and people say, well, what about retrieving dogs? What about duck? Well, I don't duck hunt, so I don't like ducks.
What about pheasant? Dove. Texas is big dove hunting season. Big dove, right?
All the pheasants I ever shot in my life, I have always shot without a dog.
Wow.
It's just as easy to walk through a cornfield
right. And
flush up the pheasant and then shoot them, and when they fall to the ground, you pick them up.
What is your favorite kind of animal hunting to do?
I like varmint hunting. So I like pigs, coyotes, that kind of stuff.
So just
it's a little tougher.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little tougher. And I never tree stand hunt. So I'm not.
Right.
I give the animal a chance at least,
Yeah.
But deer hunting is so damn easy, man. I mean, it's like, so I don't see a challenge in that. Some of the most challenging hunting I've ever done was like mountain lion hunting. Those guys are crafty, man.
And then how are you? It's the stalking piece, though, right? It's tracking them and getting the shot, right?
Trying to get into their mind and where they would, that kind of thing.
Interesting. We're talking with the gunner about his favorite kind of hunting. So your favorite kind of hunting would be, that's essentially going out and helping farmers, right?
Yeah. taking out their varmint down here.
Yeah, they're predators. It's interesting when you go do that with farmers because they have a completely different perspective, right? Hey, look, I've got a these things are predators to my business, and so I need to clear them. And so I don't know if you've never been around it, just kind of strikes you the first time you are, and you're like, wow, didn't think of it like that. And farmers are very matter of fact about it. Very matter of fact. I went pheasant hunting up in the hills, mountains really, north of Los Angeles, well north of Los Angeles, past Valencia Magic Mountain, and up by Castaic Lake up there. You know, Mike, driving through the valley?
Yeah, I know where that's at.
You got to Castaic Lake and then you headed east, and this guy who was a friend of my former father-in-law, God bless him, he owned a bunch of land up there and built a cabin, a beautiful place. And then he started trying to grow the dove population and the pheasant population up there. And what he did was he took pallets and he stacked them up, and then he put brush around them. And they think it helped the smaller animals. And he wasn't doing any farming. It helped the smaller animals be protected from the larger predatory animals, to be able to, especially birds, go into those pallets and things like hawks, not be able to grab them and kill them and things like that. And dove population exploded on his land. And they were telling me that the California, Department of Natural Resources, I think it is, or Department of Fish and Game, one of the two, came and spoke to him and said, hey, how are you doing this? Because we've seen the numbers that you report, and we're kind of interested. He said, it's not very complicated. There's a water source, normally gravity-fed, and these wooden pallets and some brush, and that's it. They were like, what? Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy solutions to easy problems. Mike was talking about it last week. You're not nervous at all, evidently, about the Red Sox and Yankees. 2.5 games, my friend.
No.
No? You're okay with it?
No. Yep. I'm fine with that.
All right. What'd you do over the weekend?
What did I do? I don't remember. Dude, you always ask me that, and it's like, you know, the thing is, I download every night, everything. I just clear the hard drive.
My memory is so bad, it doesn't bother me that you can't remember. Like, I don't know.
I can't.
You got to listen to the Commandant's interview tomorrow, or at some point, listen to it. The first question I ask him is, I won't tell you how he answers it, but the first question I ask him, right, is, and he's a Michigan guy, right? Do you want to apologize for the behavior of the Detroit Tigers last week in picking a fight with the Yankees and their unprofessional conduct in that fight? Would you like to apologize to our audience and every baseball fan in the country? I won't tell you the answer, but it's moderately entertaining. Entertaining. The Commandant, big Tiger fan. Big Tiger fan. So. Anyway, all right. So, are you? Where are you now? Is this a lot of people like this time of the year because football gets going, and the NFL, both NFL and college, and you have baseball getting into their playoffs. Are you a fan of this time of year? It's pretty good sports.
Yeah, I love the fall, man. Everything that the fall brings. Yeah, I love it. My kind of day.
All right. What else? Anything else to report before I let you go today?
No. Like I said, today I'm just taking it easy, man. Megan went back to college today, first time back in school. So, new semester, so that's kind of nice, kind of quiet around the house.
So is she commuting or what?
Yeah, she drives. They have a campus here somewhere around here. so I'm not really sure where it's at.
Are you ever going to go to school and hang out with her, go to lunch with her, stuff like that?
No. Nope.
Oh, you're hands off?
Not my thing, man.
You're hands off dad?
No, I mean, she's going to school. She doesn't need me around.
I just wonder. Right? I wonder if you were one of those helicopter parents.
No, no, not me.
All right, not your style.
Not my style, brother.
The
I've been watching this news and this Houston thing, and it's just like, you know, what really cracks me up, Mac, and it makes me upset still, is the same the way the media coverage has been over this. Even Fox, who, you know, they're kind of more of the. They got more sense than others, but what was it yesterday? They had these three women coming, being rescued off a boat. One of them crutches, and then the anchor's asking the reporter to ask them a question. You know, it's raining, and they got rain jackets on. And the last thing they do is talk to a stupid reporter. So the reporter's in the face. Oh, could you hold on one second? My anchor back in New York wants to ask a question. So the anchor's sitting there talking about this question that's taking forever to get through. You know, and it's like. Finally, the lady that's with the anchor back in New York finally says, "Eric, let them poor ladies let's go. They don't know the answer to that question. Let's let them go. They just got rescued. They don't want to be standing out in the rain." And it's like finally someone some common sense. But it's like anything to get, you know, this media. Coverage, and you know, I thought this one reporter was going to get shoved in the water by these cops that were walking by because he tried to stop the man. And finally, one cop looks at him and says, "We got a job to do. Would you please move?"
Nice.
You know, and it just kind of, yeah, it's just man. But you watched him; he's still standing in the way. And at one point, it looked like the cops were doing it on purpose. They could have walked the other way, but at one time, I thought they were trying to like knock him in the water, which would have been hilarious. You know,
you can't pay.
Get out of here. Go back home. You know, and it just kills me when you're watching the coverage and they have a weatherman or some reporter standing out in these 100-mile-an-hour winds getting battered. You know, oh, Steve, can you tell us what it's like right now? Oh, yeah, Dave, I'm here. It's like a wind tunnel. And, you know, well, why? Why do you have to stand out in the wind and be an idiot? You know, there's that fine line between stupidity and being hard. Right now you're being stupid.
Right.
You don't have to do it. Don't do it.
The other thing is that you're risking the lives of the people in your crew for that shot. I saw a picture of they were showing storm footage. They showed a picture of Geraldo getting hit in the face during some hurricane by some kind of debris. He was like getting ready to do some live shot. And then something flying through the air smacks him right in the face, and he goes down. It's like, you know what?
Right.
They're lucky that that was a piece of vegetation. Could have been a piece of wood that went into his head. You know, and it's like...
Well, it depends on who you're saying lucky. If you're Geraldo lucky, for the rest of us, it should have been a piece of sheet metal.
Right, but that's my point is, that, like, you know, I don't know. I made this point a little bit earlier. The stupid shit that you see, like there was a shot I saw before I came on Fox News. There's this person on top of the hood of a car and they've got like a kayak oar with them. And the car is up to its halfway up the windows. It's in water and it stopped. It's like, what were you doing? And now somebody's got to risk their life to come get your dumbass. You know, and during natural disasters like amateur storm chasers, stuff like that, like, we really don't need your video. And, oh, by the way, there's people out there trying to respond to this, and you make their lives more difficult. It just...
Or they're the reporter that showing a clip of civilians, and then they say, look at these people risking their lives. You know, doesn't take much for them to wash in the water, and then... assets have to be deployed to save this person, and this is ridiculous. Nah, nah, nah. And you're like, you're doing the same thing, you idiot. You don't need to be there.
Yeah, it's
you know. So don't say that they're being stupid for not paying attention and staying out of danger when you're standing right in it. So.
No, but you know what? It's all about. It's all, but it's sex sells, man. It's the clickbait. It's like you're watching this natural disaster and you're seeing how good people can be, the vast majority of people doing what they're supposed to do, you know, and doing the right things and helping everybody, blah, 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 blah. Color not important, you know, race not important, creed not important. No, it's Americans doing what Americans tend to do. And then why are these 50 idiots, you know, white supremacists, why are we putting them on TV? I mean, that's a completely made-for-TV event. Because guess what? You know, and in Boston, it was a perfect example. There was like less than 50 of these, you know, whatever you call them, like the dropped-on-your-head-at-birth crew showing up to say whatever they were going to say. And you have 15,000 people protesting against it. Okay, so what does that tell you? These people are nobody. They could never get this kind of forum. Why are you giving them a forum for this shit? Like, why
again, don't give them the platform, and you won't have the problem.
You know what, Mike? And that's exactly. It's like, do you bear any responsibility? But it's like, no. Let's get down there. Let's cover it, right? Let's give them all the media attention, and we'll whip it up into now. If you don't say I'm not a white supremacist, like, we're gonna look at you. Get out of here with that shit. Aren't there better things that we can devote this time to? Just stupid. So anyway, and then yesterday they had a protest in Berkeley, right? And you had like all these anti-fascist people show up and they want to riot and burn and shit like that. They're all dressed in black with hoods on. Give me a break, man. Arrest all of them. Throw them in jail. Say, look, come and protest peacefully. We're okay with it. But if you're gonna go beyond that, we're not doing that. And so anyway. All right, man. Have a good day. Enjoy your peace and quiet.
Yeah. I love it. I'll talk to her.
All right. Michael Musselman on a Wednesday. The it's funny when you talk to guys about being involved in humanitarian stuff. Everybody wants to do it. And the guys that have been involved in it want to do it again because of the feeling they get from it. Email. Mac, did you see the video of the people dressed completely in black in Berkeley yesterday? Why don't we just surround them, arrest them, make them go away, and then everybody else can protest in peace? I'm getting really sick and tired of these people on the far left and the far right and their desire for violence. I think it's absolute bullshit. From the Associated Press, Houston police chief says 2,000 people have been rescued from the flooding in the city. 185 requests for help are still pending. So, anyway. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back, wrap things up on a Monday. All Marine Radio continues.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it. My thanks to John Ubaldi for jumping on this morning, and also for Tim Lynch for jumping on. You can find the Ubaldi reports on the internet. You can also find it on Facebook, and I would encourage you to check that out. He's an interesting guy, and retired infantry, marine, master gunnery sergeant. Some headlines. Texas governor urges people to evacuate even if it's not mandatory. This is last week. Houston mayor told citizens, quote, to think twice before trying to leave Houston. Houston mayor told citizens, quote, to think twice before trying to leave Houston before Hurricane Harvey hit. Here's the mayor from Houston. Please think twice before trying to leave Houston en masse. No evacuation orders have been issued for the city. And that was issued, let's see, at 11:49 a.m. on the 25th of August. And then before that, he had issued this. Ignore unfounded, unsourced weather predictions that have needlessly frightened Houstonians. Get info from trusted outlets. Wow. There you have it. The Commandant of the Marine Corps will join us tomorrow. And the interview is over an hour long. And I promise you, you'll enjoy it. He's not only it helps that I know him, but we talk about things that we've talked about on the program. Some current events. We talk about the president of South Korea going. His first stop after he landed at Andrews was National Museum of the Marine Corps. Was the commandant's guest. You'll hear the commandant talk about that. And very cool stuff. So the interview, all in all, about. I want to say about an hour and 5 minutes. And they gave me an hour to do it. And so towards the end of the hour, I said, hey, I need you to shorten your answers. And he said, hey, I have time. And I said, okay. So then we busted the clock. But yeah, General Neller, awesome stuff. And it'll be an hour and 12-minute interview with the Commandant of the Marine Corps coming up tomorrow. Cool stuff. And we talk about gender. I asked him specifically about Lauren Serrano, who you heard on the program. Does the Marine Corps want her? You know, we talked about, you know, PTs and all the PFTs and all that kind of stuff. Talk a little bit about aviation readiness, whatnot. So, Commandant of the Marine Corps for an hour and 12 minutes tomorrow. Don't miss it. Tell a friend. Have a great day. This program will repeat itself momentarily. You know, to me, the whole civil military thing is certainly a legitimate question that needs to be looked at. You know, the days of you know, us making sure that the troops aren't called out, you know, are probably in the rearview mirror. There's only one organization that can respond in a robust manner in the early hours of a catastrophe before state and assets are brought to bear, and that is the active duty American military. So some of this stuff is senseless. That response ought to be built in, especially where places have historical issues that they deal with on a regular basis. And the stuff I participated in would tell me that we need the federal legislation to do that kind of stuff. Because if we can do it around the world, on a moment's notice before those countries can get off their ass and get, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean they've been knocked on their ass by Mother Nature or some kind of event. Then we ought to be able to do it in our own country. And so, and again, in that way, America would see its best and brightest in action, you know, regardless of color or any other issue, doing what the American military does all over the world. It would be a good public lesson to jam down the throats of the viewing public, as opposed to this other bullshit that we see all the time. To be honest with you, that I'm frankly sick of. I'm sick of seeing these alt-left idiots. I'm sick of seeing these anti-fascist people that believe that they have the privilege of deciding what can be stated in public and cannot be stated in public. That's as un-American as the idiots that are spouting whatever stupid shit they're spouting. And why the law enforcement community of Berkeley doesn't do something about it and send a message to them that, hey, this is Berkeley. We believe in the First Amendment before we believe in any of the rest of this shit. So on that, have a great afternoon. We'll be back momentarily.